This is the NBC Theater. From the NBC Theater in Hollywood, an hour-length drama adapted from the D.H. Lawrence novel, Sons and Lovers. The radio version is by Clarice A. Ross of NBC. At intermission, we will bring you a commentary on the writings of D.H. Lawrence by the noted author and literary critic, Diana Trilling. A commentary which Mrs. Trilling transcribed in New York earlier this week. Here now, Sons and Lovers by D.H. Lawrence.
There was the time of the small coal pits, some of which had been worked since the days of Charles II, when the few colliers lived in thatched cottages 2 fields away and burrowed with their donkeys like ants into the earth, and the brook ran under the alder trees, scarcely soiled by these small mines. But then came the large mines, and the financiers found that they had struck on a good thing. So all down the valleys, from Selby and Nuttall, new mines were sunk. And soon there were 6 pits working, running across the farmlands to Bunker's Hill and north to Beggar Lee, that looks across at the hills of Derbyshire. Then the miners lived in great blocks of dwellings that the owners built, and their lanterns winked brightly in the roads as they walked out to the pits in the morning before sunrise, leaving their wives to wait at home and wonder what the earnings would be. Minton Pit was a large mine set among cornfields. The white steam melted slowly up towards the sky. The wheels of the headstocks twinkled high above. The screen, shuffling its coal into the trucks, made a rattling noise. And the miner's son, frightened and sad, came on his errand.
What doest want, lad?
I want me feyther. He's got to go to London.
Thy feyther? Is he down pit? What's his name?
Walter Morell.
What, Walter? Is something amiss?
He's got to go to London.
That never says. Hey there, Joe. Joe Ward.
Aye.
Gear ring on the phone down pit. Walter Morell's wanted. Something's amiss. There's his lad here.
Will he come?
Aye, lad, in a few minutes.
Is it thee, Paul?
Aye, our father.
Is he worse?
You've got to go to London.
He's never gone, child.
Yes.
Ah, I was ever again his going to London to work. If he'd bided home and gone down pit with me. When were to die there, Paul?
Last night we had a telegram from me mother. It read, William died last night. Let father come and bring money.
Yes, Paul. Have you taken good care of your brother Arthur and your sister Annie?
I have, our mother. Where is...
They're bringing him up from the station.
Where shall we hear him when he does come?
Here in the front room.
Then I better shift the table.
Yes, yes.
And hear him across the chairs, lass?
Must you ask everything, Walter? Yes, I suppose so. Across the chairs.
Morell! Morell! Give us a hand!
He's here. It's the wagon with the coffin. William's here.
Oh, my son.
Will we be needing a candle?
Don't cry, our mother.
He didn't know me, our Paul. William didn't know me. I found him lying there in a cold room with none to tend him. And he didn't know me. He died. All alone.
They're coming, mother.
Steady. Steady now. Gently. Gently, Loder.
Oh, he's a weight.
I never see such a length of man. Now then, steady. Steady.
My son. Oh, my son.
now, Mother. Please, please don't cry.
Oh, my son, my son.
After the death of his brother William, Paul was the eldest child. In due course, he went to work, traveling each day the long train ride to Nottingham, where he spent 12 hours clerking in the factory of Mr. Jordan, manufacturer of surgical appliances. At night, he dragged home again, tired but proud, to add his few shillings to the family's purse. His mother, her love for her husband long since dead, worried over him, was proud of him, and loved him.
You've been far enough tonight.
It's only 10 o'clock, Mother.
You've been to Willie Farm again, have you? To walk out with Miriam Leavis?
Oh, now, don't fret, Mother.
You must have walked her right home again to come in at this hour. She must be wonderfully fascinating that you can't get away from her, but must go trailing 8 miles at this time of night.
Well, I do like to talk to her.
Is there nobody else to talk to?
Well, now, you wouldn't say anything if I'd been out somewheres with another boy.
You know I should. No matter who it was, you oughtn't to go trailing out at night when you've been at Nottingham all day. Besides, bits of lads and girls courting. It's disgusting.
It is not courting.
I don't know what else you'd call it.
It's not. We only talk.
Till goodness only knows what time and distance.
Why don't you like Miriam?
I don't say I don't like her. I don't hold with children keeping company and never did.
But you don't mind our Annie going out with Jim.
They've got more sense than you. I say this to you, Paul. No good can ever come to you with that Miriam Leavis.
Come on, Paul. The swing's here in the cowshed. The boys put it up yesterday.
Ah, I see it. Oh, we've got no place for anything like this in the bottoms where I live. That's a fine piece of rope, Miriam.
Isn't it a fine swing?
Oh, isn't it? Come on, then, and have first go.
Oh, no. I won't go first. Here, I'll put some bags on the seat. See? Now it's comfortable. You go.
All right, then, stand up. Here I go.
Paul, Paul, not too high.
Who's afraid? I can see clear to the edge of the wood when I swing up.
You'll fall.
I won't. Oh, it's a treat of a swing. Hey, look at the swallow. There he goes.
Oh, you frightened him.
That I did. He wasn't looking for anyone to swing right up to the roof. Oh, I've had too long a turn. I'm coming down. Oh, it's a treat of a swing, a real treat of a swing. Oh, now you go, Miriam.
No. No, I won't. I'm afraid.
Oh, come on, I'll give you a shove.
No, no, I like to watch you swing, Paul. I don't want to do it myself.
The years passed. Paul was 19 and earning his 20 shillings a week. If he thought of striking out alone and for himself, he put the thought away. For his father's earnings at the pit grew less and less. And now, another son left the house.
There's a letter come, our mother. It's from Arthur.
Read it, then. Where's he been these 2 days instead of coming home?
Mother. Mother, Arthur's enlisted for a soldier.
He's done what?
He says he was a fool. He doesn't want to be in the army. He wants you to come and get him out.
Let me see that. Fool. I should think he had been a fool. Let him stop there.
Yes, let him stop.
Oh, if I'm not sick,
now,
sick.
Now, you're not going to worry your soul about this, do you hear?
I'm to take it as a blessing, I suppose.
But you're not going to mount it up to a tragedy.
The fool, the young fool.
Arthur will look well in a uniform.
Oh, will he? A common soldier.
What am I but a common clerk?
A great deal, my boy. You're a man, Paul, not a thing in a red coat. The young nuisance. 17 years old and he's ruined himself for life. What good will he be, do you think, after this?
Oh, now, Mother, it may lick him into shape.
Lick him into shape? Lick what marrow there was out of his bones, and that wasn't much. A fine thing.
Well, shall you go after him to Derby?
Oh, I'll go. But it'll do no good. They'll never let him out. Now, here's your father coming. Walter, I've got to go down to Derby.
Hester, lass, what takes thee there?
That Arthur.
Him, eh? What's the gate now?
He's only enlisted for a soldier.
Nay. That he never has.
He has the letter to say so.
A son of mine. May he never set foot in the house again.
What? What are you saying? You'll turn no son of mine out of doors, no matter what he's done.
I do. A fool as runs away for a soldier. Let him look after his hen. I shall do no more for him.
A fat lot you've done for him. Or for me, or Paul, or Annie. A fat lot you've done as it is.
But Arthur was gone. Meanwhile, Paul continued with Miriam. But at times it was a torment to him. On warm nights they walked together in the fields, always talking. And such was their purity, they hardly knew they wanted anything else. Paul almost hated her sometimes, and yet he felt that they belonged together.
Here, let me pick you some of these berries. You can put them on.
Oh, Paul, no. I always put flowers and things on just anyhow. I'm not clever with them.
If you had these berries in your hair, you'd look like a witch, not a reveler. Why is that?
I don't know.
Why can't you laugh, Miriam? It almost seems to hurt you to laugh.
I don't know.
I wish you could laugh at me for just one minute. I feel as if it would set something free.
But I do laugh at you. I do.
Oh, never. When you laugh, I always want to cry.
I'm sure I don't want you to. Don't talk anymore.
I'm always talking like this, always reeling off something or other for you. Why can't you want me? And not just what I can reel off for you. You make me so spiritual. And I don't want to be spiritual.
What do you want, Paul?
I don't know.
Paul was much at Willy Farm. At times, in the face of Mrs. Morell's cold disapproval, Miriam came to the Morell house and Paul would walk her home. Late one night, he reached his own home to find Annie in a fury.
It's time you were coming in, our Paul.
What's the matter now?
You don't know how badly my mother is.
Why is she badly?
She could scarcely get home.
Why could you scarcely get home, Mother?
I found her here sitting white as a sheet an hour since.
Why could you scarcely get home?
It was enough to upset anybody. It was all the parcels. Meat, green groceries, a pair of curtains.
Oh, why did you lug them? You needn't have.
Then who would?
Oh, let Annie fetch the meat.
Then I would have, but how was I to know? You were off with Miriam instead of being home to help.
Oh, what is it, Mother? Why are you badly?
I suppose it must be my heart. I've felt it often enough.
Oh, why haven't you said so? Why haven't you seen a doctor?
You'd never notice anything. You're too eager to be off with Miriam.
Oh, am I? Any more than you with Leonard?
I'm going to marry Leonard. And I was home at 9:45. And I'm going to bed. Good night, our Paul.
You go to bed, too, before your father comes home. You know it's Friday and he'll be drunk again. And if you want anything to eat first, you'd better get it.
No, I don't want anything.
I brought you pork pie. There it is.
No, I don't want anything.
Why does Miriam come here always?
Oh, not because I ask her.
She doesn't come without you want her.
And what if I do?
Nothing, if it was sensible or reasonable. But to go traipsing back up there miles through the mud and come in at midnight and go to Nottingham in the morning.
And if it wasn't midnight, she'd be angry just the same.
I should, because there's no sense in it. She wants to carry you off. She wants to leave nothing of you for me or even for yourself. Is she so fascinating that you put up with that?
I do like her, but...
Like her? It seems to me you're like nothing and nobody else. There's neither Annie nor me nor anyone now for you.
Oh, what nonsense, Mother. We're just friends. I don't love her. I just like her.
Then why do you fly to her so often? What do you find to talk about so much?
Why, painting and books... You don't care about those things.
No. And no more will you at my age.
But I do now. And Miriam does. And those things don't matter to you.
And how do you know that? Do you ever try me? What is it then that matters to me?
You're old, Mother. And we're young.
Yes, I know it well. I'm old, and therefore I must stand aside. I'm only good to wait on you. The rest is for Miriam.
Oh, now you know it isn't, Mother. You know it isn't.
It looks a great deal like it.
Oh, no, Mother, really, I don't love her. I talk to her, but I want to come home to you.
I can't bear it. I could let another woman, but not her. She'd leave me no room, not a bit of room.
Oh, Mother, Mother, don't cry. I tell you, I don't love her.
William's dead and Arthur's gone and Annie will go soon and I've never had a husband, really. He means nothing to me.
Oh, I'll stay with you, Mother. Now don't cry.
My boy.
Where art thou, Hattie?
It's your father. Go now, Paul.
No, I'll stay.
Ain't your mischiefs again, has he?
Sober, at any rate.
Aye, she'll be throwing it at a man if he needs a glass of beer when he's that bar curled up from the pit. It's a wonder if there'd be out for him in his own house.
Now leave her alone.
Should I know, you young sprat?
There might be a glass for you if you'd bring home money enough to pay for it.
Man's that bar curled up and starving for his supper. Here. Give us that bit of pie.
That was not bought for you. You bring home 25 shillings a week, and on that I'm not buying pork pie for you to stuff.
Not for me. Not for me, is not. I'll show you.
But
in the fire way, then.
Waste your own stuff. Don't be throwing food in the fire.
I got. I'll show you, you young jockey.
All right, show me. Come on.
I will, then.
Hey, you daren't hit me.
Stop it.
Oh, Mother.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, Mother. Mother, here, lie down on the sofa. Here, let me help you.
What's the matter with her now?
She's faint.
Faint, is she? I'll faint a lot of you one of these days.
Oh, don't be poorly, Mother. Don't be poorly.
It's nothing, Paul. Nothing. Go to bed.
Look at the daffodils, Paul. Aren't they magnificent?
Magnificent? Well, that's a little thick. They're pretty. Why must you always be fondling things?
But I love to touch the flowers.
Well, can't you like anything without trying to clutch the heart out of it? You're always begging things to love you.
Paul, what's the matter with you?
Oh, I don't know. Miriam, don't you think I come up here to the farm too often?
No, of course not. We're friends.
That's right. We're friends. That's just it. We're only friends. And maybe, if I didn't come here so often, you'd get to like somebody else, some other man.
But I don't know any other man. And why should I?
Well, maybe I oughtn't to see you so much. Unless we mean to marry.
Somebody's been giving you ideas. Your mother. She never liked me.
Now, don't blame her. I just think we ought to break off.
Paul, what has happened?
This is no good, that's all. I'm lacking something towards you.
But I don't understand.
I know you don't. You never will. You won't believe that I can't do it. Any more than I can fly up like a skylark.
Can't what?
Can't love you. I don't love you. And I never will. And that's all.
It was near this time that Paul's sister Annie married. He was a fine young man, steady, with a decent place. And Mrs. Morrell was glad. Yet, sitting in the front room afterwards, it seemed to Paul she looked very lonely.
It's not that I'm sorry she's married, but it seems strange that she should go from me. It seems hard. That's how mothers are.
Shall you be miserable about her, Mother?
When I think of my own wedding day, I can only hope her life will be different.
Well, he's a good lad. He'll be good to Annie.
Yes, yes, he will. Folks say he's not good enough for her. But I say if a man has a good heart and a girl's fond of him, why then, our Paul, it should be all right. He's as good as she.
You don't mind, then?
I should never have let a daughter of mine marry a man I didn't think would be good to her. And yet she's gone, and I want her back.
Well, at any rate, Mother, I shall never marry.
Aye, they all say that, my lad. You've not met the one yet. Only wait a year or two.
Oh, but I shan't marry, Mother. I shall live with you. We'll have a servant and a little house, a pretty house.
Aye, my lad, it's easy to talk. We'll see when the time comes.
What time? I'm nearly 23.
Oh, you're not one as would marry young. But in 3 years' time...
In 3 years' time, I shall still be with you. You'll see.
We'll see, my boy.
But you don't want me to marry, do you?
My boy, you can't go through your life without anybody to care for you and do for you. I should say you can't.
And you think I ought to marry?
Sooner or later, every man ought.
But you'd rather it were later.
Well, it's as the saying goes. A son is my son till he takes him a wife, but my daughter's my daughter the whole of her life.
You think I'd let a wife take me away from you?
You wouldn't ask her to marry your mother as well as you.
Well, she could do as she liked. She wouldn't have to interfere.
She wouldn't, till she'd got you. Then you'd see.
Well, I shan't see. I'll never marry while I've got you. I won't.
But I can't leave you with nobody, my boy.
Oh, you're not going to leave me. You're only 53. You'll die when you're 75 and I'm 44. Then I'll marry a staid body, a fat widow, so I will.
Oh, go and get your sleep, boy.
We'll have a pretty house, you and me, and a servant, and you shall have lace on your bonnets. Mm. And we'll make trips to the seaside. Uh-huh. And I'll grow rich and buy you fruit and flowers and sweets and everything you'll want.
Oh, go and get your sleep, I say, and stop this dreaming.
Mother, I've broken off with Miriam.
Have you? Then what was all this talk about marrying and giving in marriage?
I've told you, Mother. I shall never leave you.
We'll see. We'll see. But she never was good for you, boy. I'm very glad.
From Hollywood, the NBC Theater is bringing you a dramatization of Sons and Lovers by D.H. Lawrence. If you are interested in supplementing your enjoyment of these NBC Theater productions with home study under college supervision, be sure to listen to the announcement at the close of this program. And now, our intermission commentary, Diana Trilling.
When D.H. Lawrence died in 1930 at the age of 45... he left behind him an enormous body of work, novels, long and short stories, poetry, criticism, essays, travel pieces. But he is, of course, best known for his novels, and among his novels, Sons and Lovers is probably the one that has been most widely read and read with the most sympathy. Like Samuel Butler's Way of All Flesh and Somerset Maugham's Of Human Bondage, Sons and Lovers is a developmental novel, the story of the coming of age of a hero. The hero, Paul Morrell, like the central characters of most developmental novels, is the author himself. Even for our modern times, which are such personal times, Lawrence is an unusually subjective writer. There is scarcely a word he set to paper which isn't a frank record of his own experience and feeling. And in Lawrence's personal history, the single most significant factor was his complex relation with his parents. There are many versions of his mother and father in all of Lawrence's work, but the fullest portrait is in Sons and Lovers. Like Mr. Morrell, Lawrence's father was a coal miner, an uncouth, uneducated, sensitive, darkly self-protective man. And like Mrs. Morrell, Lawrence's mother was a woman of gentle birth, also fiercely self-defensive, very ambitious for her children, especially for her gifted son, Paul. Paul is Lawrence himself, the child who must free himself from his mother's overwhelming love if he would come to manhood. Miriam and Clara also have their originals in Lawrence's actual biography. Miriam is the brooding mother sweetheart who, like Mrs. Morrell, would keep Paul dependent and unmanly. Clara is the symbol of a female assertiveness, which also robs man of his necessary self-esteem. In actuality, as in fiction, Lawrence's mother died, leaving her son on the threshold of a maturity he was unable fully to grasp. But Lawrence was no ordinary person. His private sufferings were his genius. The question which was the heritage from his childhood became the central problem of all his work, both fiction and nonfiction. How does a man become a man? How does a woman become a woman? This was the problem Lawrence saw as the central problem of modern life, underlying all our social and political disquiet, and at the heart of all our personal despairs. As he went on in his career, Lawrence indicted the whole of civilized life because it was destructive of this very essence of existence, the human being's capacity for coming to terms with his biological nature. But Sons and Lovers is an early book. Here Lawrence is still merely posing the question and groping toward a possible solution. Sons and Lovers is a first statement of the sexual theme on which one of the most original and courageous minds of our time was to play so many rich and fruitful variations.
Thank you, Mrs. Trilling. Our radio version of Sons and Lovers will continue from Hollywood after a brief pause for station identification.
As he grew older, Paul began to take an interest in painting and drawing, teaching himself, and sketching endlessly whenever and wherever he could. Often he would sit through an evening working with his pencils and his colors while his mother sewed or read nearby and glanced proudly at him from time to time. When he was 23 years old, he sent in the painting of a landscape to the exhibition at Nottingham Castle, and one morning, not long afterwards, just as he was washing himself in the scullery, the postman brought a letter.
Paul! Paul!
What is it, Mother? What's the matter?
Oh, my boy, I knew you should do it. I knew it.
But what is it?
Well, happily, I brought you some good news in that letter, Mrs.
Paul's picture's taken first prize at the exhibition press, and it's sold for 20 guineas.
First prize?
Oh, that's something like that is.
And a major has bought it.
Oh, it looks like meaning something that does, Mrs. Morell. Oh, I'm happy to have brought you such a lucky letter, Paul. A good morning to you both.
Oh, Mother, let me see it. Is it true?
It's true, boy. I always said you should do it.
But so much.
I didn't look for so much. Oh, but I knew.
20 guineas. Oh, you shall have it all of it. And you'll buy yourself such finery, our mother.
Indeed, I shall take nothing. Not one penny. It's yours.
Nay, but you shall.
Where's he now? Where's the lad? Oh, it's never true, our Paul. That thou's got first prize for that painting and sold it for £50.
What a story.
Oh, then. I said I were sure it were a lie. But Postman Fred, he said thou told him.
As if I should tell him such stuff.
Oh, 'twere a lie, then.
It's true that he got the first prize.
Has he begun?
As for £50, that's nonsense. It's sold for 20 guineas.
20 guineas? Then never says. 20 guineas for a bit of a painting is knocked off in an hour or two. Ah, that's a fair return, my lad, it is. When dost handle the money?
I don't know, Father.
When the man has sent his painting, I've no doubt.
Tis a proud thing. Aye, and me old lad would have done as much if they had not killed him. My William.
Now, don't speak of him. You know it hurts my mother.
Never mind, lad. Go in, Walter, and wash the pit dirt off you.
Aye, and I shall.
And don't go tracking yourself out here to dry and get dressed. You can dress as well in the scullery.
Thou'll see as I shall come out to warm my breeches at fire. Should thee like to clap thy son into breeches as cold as a tub of water?
Get along about it, then. You'll be a gentleman, Paul. A success and a gentleman. You'll go to dinner in fine houses and wear an evening suit and all.
And where will I be getting an evening suit from, Mother?
You shall wear William's. I have it still upstairs.
William's?
It cost £4.10 and he only wore it 3 times.
Should you like me to wear it, Mother?
The living need it and the dead don't. It's beautiful stuff. I could never find it in my heart to let your father wear the trousers. And very glad I am now.
Well, I'll have it then if you want me to. I shall look like a swell, shan't I?
Aye, lad, you will. But when's all your cleverness going to bring you happiness, I should like to know?
Happiness? What is happiness? How am I to be happy?
That's for you to judge. But you'll have means now. You can find a good woman who'll make you happy and settle down and stop fretting about.
You mean take life easy? I think that kind of happiness would bore me.
You never give it a chance.
Oh, what does it matter? What does happiness matter as long as life's full?
You ought to be happy, Paul. How could I bear to think your life wouldn't be a happy one?
Well, aren't I well enough off?
You're not, my son. You're fretting and wandering. One ought to be happy, one ought.
Oh, never mind, little one. So long as life isn't paltry or miserable, the rest doesn't matter. Happiness or unhappiness.
But I want you to be happy, Paul. It's all I want.
Nay, my dear. Say rather, you want me to live.
It was when he broke away from Miriam that Paul began to see a great deal of Clara Dawes. Clara was older than he and separated from her husband, whom he knew slightly and disliked a great deal. He had met Clara at Willey Farm, for she was a friend of Miriam's. She had taken up the cause of the suffragettes, and Paul had found her at first meeting beautiful, haughty, and very unpleasant.
I believe I saw you at Margaret Bonford's meeting the other evening, Mrs. Dawes.
You may have. What were you doing there?
Waiting until time for my train. I think she's a lovable little woman.
Lovable? She's a great deal cleverer than most men.
Well, I didn't say she wasn't. She's lovable for all that.
And that, of course, is all that matters, is it?
Well, it matters more than her cleverness. That won't get her to heaven.
It isn't heaven she wants, or any of us. It's her fair share on earth.
Well, I wish she were sitting comfortably in peace. That's what I wish for her.
Darning her husband's stockings.
Well, I'm sure she wouldn't mind.
Oh, you'd like to shut us all up safely, wouldn't you? While you go out and play the brave knight.
And I should carry your banner of green and heliotrope. I would have Women's Suffrage Union emblazoned on my shield beneath a woman rampant.
I don't doubt it. You'd much rather fight for a woman than let her fight for herself.
I would. When she fights for herself, she's like a dog in front of a looking glass, in a mad fury over its own shadow.
And you are the looking glass?
Or the shadow.
You're much too clever.
Well, I'm leaving it to you to be good. Be good, sweet maid, and just let me be clever.
That was how they met at first. But the second time, it was very different. Paul had occasion to take her a message. He found the little dark house in a mean street and a little dark kitchen with a tall, forbidding woman in it, who was Clara's mother, and where the two of them earned a few shillings livelihood, drawing and carding lace. And Clara was humble and ashamed.
Sit you down. And mind you don't disturb the lace anywhere.
And I'll try not.
Will you drink a bottle of stout?
Oh, no, thank you.
Nonsense. Clara. Get him a bottle of stout.
Mother, please, if he doesn't want it.
He looks as if he could do with it. You haven't a healthy colour, young man. Light a cigarette if you like. So long as you don't set the house afire.
Thank you.
Nay, you needn't thank me. I shall be glad to smell a bit of smoke in the house again. A house of women's as dead as a house with no fire, to my thinking. I like a man about, if only to snap at. Clara, you're dawdling. Get back to that Jenny.
Do you like jennying lace?
What can a woman do? There's no decent work for us, thanks to the men.
No, then you shut up about the men. If the women wasn't fools, the men wouldn't be bad ones. That's what I'd say. You're at Jordan's?
Yes.
Clara had a good place there once, and a husband, too. Now she's got neither one nor t'other.
Stop it, can't you?
Would you care to be back at Jordan's? I could watch out for a place.
I don't think so.
Oh, yes, she would. She'd thank her stars if she could get back. Don't you listen to her. She's forever on that eye horse of hers. And its back is that thin and starved. One of these days it'll cut her in two.
Clara came back to Jordan's. And Paul found himself making reasons to go down to the lower floors, where the girls sat working at their machines.
Will you have a chocolate? I bought a handful to sweeten me up.
All right, then.
You know, I've noticed something odd about you. Whenever I see you sitting at that machine, you don't seem really to be there. You always look as if you were just waiting for something. Like Penelope at her weaving. Shall I call you Penelope?
What's the difference?
Oh, difference or not, so long as it pleases me. Here, you seem to forget I'm your boss, it just occurs to me.
And what does that mean?
It means I've got a right to boss you.
Is there anything you want to complain about?
Oh, now, you don't need to be nasty.
I don't know what you mean.
I want you to treat me nicely. And respectfully.
Call you sir, perhaps?
Yes, call me sir. I should love it.
Then I wish you would go back upstairs, sir. We ought to be getting back to the factory.
Oh, let's keep walking for a bit. It's no matter. How old were you when you married?
8 years ago. 22.
Why'd you leave? When did you leave him?
3 years ago.
5 years. Did you love him when you married him?
I thought I did, if I thought about it at all. I seem to have been asleep all my life.
And when did you wake up?
I don't know that I ever have.
He didn't wake you?
No. He never really mattered to me.
Was he horrid to you?
He sort of degraded me. I felt as if I wanted to run and was all tied up.
And were you horrid to him?
In what way?
I don't know. Didn't you do something that knocked him to pieces? Didn't you make him feel as if he were, well, nothing?
You are so clever, my friend. He was brutal.
Why did you leave him finally?
Because he was unfaithful to me.
Did you ever give him a chance? I mean, to mean something to you.
I married him, and I was willing.
Yeah, but you left him out of account all along.
He left me. He said he couldn't mean everything to me, and he tried to bully me into it, and he couldn't. That's all. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Let's get back to work.
Paul's days and his thoughts began to be filled with Clara. Each day at noon during the dinner hour, they walked out together. And finally, on a Monday, they had a half holiday. They took a tram. At the end of the line, they walked along the deserted river banks.
The Trent's very full.
Yes. Oh, be careful, the path's slippery.
I'm all right.
You've been so silent. What are you thinking?
Oh, nothing. I was only wondering, how old are you, Paul?
25.
And I'm 30.
I know that.
I shall be 31, or am I 31?
I neither know nor care. What does it matter? Oh, hey, watch out there.
What are we to do now?
Well, I don't know. The path just stops. It's the high water. It's washed it down. Shall we go back?
Not for my sake.
Well, your shoes will be ruined. Oh, look here, though. There's a rut where a man has walked. Perhaps the path starts up again ahead. I'll see if I can make it to that next tree. Then I can help you after.
Careful, don't slip.
I'm all right. Now, let me take your parcel and give me your hand.
Reach.
Here you come now. Jump.
Oh, the parcel.
Oh, what the devil, the string's broken. Here, maybe I can reach it.
Oh, don't be foolish, it's into the middle of the river. It doesn't matter.
The river bank is a swindle. I don't think we can go another foot forward.
Then we shall have to go back.
Oh, stop a minute. Do you see those two beech trees up on the bank? There's a patch of ground between them. Let's go up there. Come on.
Oh, now this slips.
Oh, don't be frightened. I have a hold of you. One more step now. There. The mucky river will not reach us.
No.
Here, sit down.
It's damp.
On my coat.
All right.
Here. Your flowers have got all smashed.
What does it matter?
It doesn't matter. There's no one to see. We're all alone here, Clara. There's no one else in the world.
Where have you been, Pa?
Well, down Clifton Grove, Mother, and by the river, with Clara.
Mrs. Dawes? Won't people talk?
What if they do?
Well, you know what folk are.
I can't help it. Their joy isn't so almighty important, after all.
I think you ought to consider her. Do you ask her opinion?
What of?
Of you and she together, of the whole thing.
I don't care.
Is she in love with you, Paul?
Perhaps.
And you with her?
I don't know. I don't know what's the matter with me, Mother. I don't think I can love.
That's nonsense.
No. To marry, for instance. I don't want to marry Clara, or anybody else.
Plenty of time for that yet.
Oh, no, Mother. I love Clara, perhaps. And I did Miriam, perhaps. But to give myself to someone in marriage, I can't. I couldn't belong to them. They seem to want my soul, and I can't give it them.
You haven't met the right woman.
I shall never while you live.
We'll see, my son. And meanwhile, I think you ought to consider what people will say.
Well, so I do. What can they say? I believe you're jealous.
You know I should be glad if she weren't a married woman.
Oh, now, that's nonsense. Look, I'll bring her here to tea of a Sunday, so I will.
You'll please yourself, my son, and we'll see how it'll all end.
Very well, my mother. I'll abide by the end. Clara, do you ever want to marry me?
Do you me?
Well, I should like us to have children. But you don't really want a divorce from your husband, do you?
No, I don't think I do.
Why?
I don't know.
Do you feel as if you belong to him?
No, I don't think so.
What then?
I think he belongs to me.
Do you hate him?
He's a brute. All men are.
Am I?
You. You know nothing about me. You don't trouble to.
Not more than he knew.
Perhaps not as much.
But you know me pretty well. Did you know him as well as you know me?
He wouldn't let me.
And have I let you know me?
It's what men won't let you do. They won't let you get really near to them.
And haven't I let you?
You can't come out of yourself. You never will. He could do that better than you. I feel as if I hadn't got you, as if all of you weren't here. You don't want me, really. You only want a woman.
Oh, you begin to value your husband a little now that you haven't got him.
No, that's not true. I'm only telling you how he was different from you.
Good evening, Mr. Morrell.
What? Oh, great heavens, don't jump at a man on a dark road like that. I can't see who it is. Good evening.
Half a minute there, my lad.
What is it? Who is it? I've got a train to make.
You'll catch no train this night. Can they see my face now, you varmint?
Dawes.
Aye, Dawes. I've got you now, have I? You think you can go gallivanting about making free with a man's wife, eh, my young puppy? I've got you for it now.
Now stand aside.
Yes, not. You're going to get it from me now.
I don't want to fight you.
Are you going to take that coat off, or do you want to lie down on it?
I tell you, I don't know how to fight. I won't fight.
Won't you? Then stand and take your beating.
Afterwards, there was a gnawing, a sickness at his heart. His life seemed unbalanced, as though it would smash into pieces. And then one day...
Paul, is it you?
Oh, Annie, what are you doing here? Have you come on a visit?
No visit.
Is my mother ill?
She's not very well.
Is she in bed?
Yes. Don't upset her, Paul.
Mother.
I thought you were never coming, Paul.
Oh, Mother. Mother, you look so poorly.
There, lad. Don't cry. It's nothing. You're late. You must be hungry.
Oh, no. What is it, Mother?
It's a bit of a tumor, I think, my boy. You needn't trouble. It's been there a long time.
Where?
Here, on my side. You mustn't trouble. Perhaps they can do something.
When were you poorly?
It was yesterday it begun.
In pain? And you didn't tell me.
Oh, you have your own affairs, child. And it's not more pain than I've often had. It's been there a long time. Oh, you mustn't cry.
Did you sleep, my dear?
Yes.
Ah, but not very well.
Well, yes.
No, that didn't. Has it been bad?
Oh, no, lad. It hurt a bit. Nothing to mention.
It's a sunny day out of doors.
It's a beautiful day.
Do you think you'll be carried downstairs for a bit?
I don't know. That morphia the doctor left, it makes me so tired.
Oh, here then, my mother. Rest here, and I shall do your hair in a plait and buy something fine for your tea.
Ah, you're good to me, my lad.
And tomorrow will be a fine day, and you'll be carried down, and you shall sit like a lady and be beautiful and strong and well again. You shall, little mother. You must.
Ah, then, my boy, we'll see. We'll see. The parson called today, Paul.
Oh, did he?
He said for me to be thankful I was dying. He told me I'd have my mother and father and my sisters and William in the other land.
And do you believe it, my mother?
I said to him as I'd done without those for a long time, and I would still. It's the living I want, Paul, not the dead.
Oh, but you suffer, little one. If I had to die, I'd die. I'd will to die.
Do you think I haven't? Do you think you can die when you're alive?
Mother, shall you have anything to eat?
Perhaps I'll have a cup of pinches.
It'll only keep your strength up.
I know, child. But it's such annoying when I don't eat. I can't bear it. Bring me something, child, please. Paul.
Yes, I'm here, little.
How late you are.
No, it's only just gone 11.
I thought it was later.
Can't you sleep, my pigeon?
No.
Well, never mind, little. Never mind, my love. I'll stop with you half an hour, and perhaps it'll be better.
Can't the doctor give her something to put an end to it?
He says she can't last many days.
But she will.
Yes, she won't give in. She's got to be pushed out of life, inch by inch.
Paul, I can't bear it much longer. We shall all go mad, and she'll live over Christmas.
Oh, no. No, she won't. Annie, she can't.
She will.
Annie, I shall give her morphia.
I do. Do it, Paul. Paul, the milk's bitter.
Oh, it's a new sleeping draught the doctor left. He thought it wouldn't make you so tired in the morning.
I hope it won't. But it's bitter.
We know, love. We'll give you some clean milk afterwards.
Yes, do, Annie. This is horrid.
Never mind, love. Let us settle you down. You'll go to sleep now.
Paul. Hmm? Paul.
What? What is it? What's happening?
Come and look. Come quickly.
Oh, yes, all right. Yeah, but what is it?
I was lying down with her as I always do. I was afraid to go to sleep for fear I'd move and wake her. And now, come and look.
Oh, she's going.
Yes.
How long's she been like it?
Just now.
Oh, this is awful. Oh, why doesn't she go? Lord, why doesn't she go?
Better stop to home, lad. Doesn't her think?
No, my father. Go to work. She'll last through tomorrow.
I think she canna.
Go to work, my father. She won't die.
Paul. Paul, she's gone.
Oh, mother.
She's better. Remember, dear. She's better.
My love. My love. Mother. My love. My love.
It's nigh midnight, boy. Where has been?
I don't know. I went out.
I thought they were never coming, lad.
I didn't think you'd sit up.
Annie's gone to her home. I couldn't seem to go to sleep with her lying up there.
I forgot you'd be alone, my father. I'm sorry.
Just want out to eat?
No.
Sit thee. I made thee a drop of hot milk. Get it down thee. It's cold enough for out.
No, I don't want it.
Get it down thee, boy. There needs it. There looks like death thy sin.
Paul, I've been to see my husband.
Have you, Clara?
I got word. He's been in Sheffield Hospital with typhoid. He's nearly down and out.
Are you sorry?
He's been very badly.
What did he say to you?
He wants me to come back.
You're not going.
I've been horrible to him, Paul.
He's upset you, I can see it.
Horrible.
Well, I've said many a time you haven't treated him well.
I've treated him badly. And now you treat me badly.
Well, how do I?
It serves me right. I never considered him worth having, and you don't consider me. It serves me right. He loved me 1,000 times better than you ever did.
No, that isn't true.
He did. Mrs. failed you and I worse than anything I ever had with him. He respected me. He loved me as best he could. You never loved me at all. I don't think you know how to love.
What is it, then? Why is it?
I made him horrible. I know I did. You've taught me that. And you've taught me that I have to go back to him, Paul. I'm going back where I belong.
It was kind of you to call, Miriam.
I wanted to say how sorry I felt about your mother.
She's gone. We won't talk about her. Will you drink some coffee?
I should like some. Let me see your sketchbook, Paul. It's a long time since we used to talk over your paintings together.
Oh, it's not worth looking at. I don't work at it anymore.
Why?
Oh, I don't know. I can't seem to find life in things anymore.
You will again.
Yes, perhaps. Did I hear something about you earning your own living now?
Yes, I'm teaching.
Well, I say, that sounds all right for you. I suppose you're glad.
Very glad.
Yes. Yes, it will be something.
I think it will be a great deal. Why do you think it won't?
Well, you'll find earning your own living isn't everything.
No, I don't suppose it is.
I suppose work can be nearly everything to a man, though it isn't to me. But not for a woman. A woman can give it only the unimportant part of herself.
If that's true, it's a great shame.
Yes, it is. But then I don't know everything.
How are things with you, Paul?
Oh, about all right.
Nay, I think not. Paul?
Yes?
I think we ought to be married.
Why?
See how you waste yourself. You might be ill, you might die. And I never know. Oh, it would be no more than if I had never known
you. And if we married?
At any rate, I could prevent you wasting yourself and being a prey to other women like Clara.
A prey?
So you were.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know if marriage would be much good.
I only think of you.
Yes, I know you do. But you want to put me in your pocket. I should die there. I should smother.
And what will you do otherwise?
I don't know. Go on, I suppose. Perhaps go abroad.
Oh, Paul, it's a waste, a waste.
Perhaps. Will you have me, then, to marry me?
Oh, don't. Don't look so pained. Don't make it my choice.
Choose.
Do you want it?
Not very much.
Then it will not be. Now I must go.
Paul!
went out, out into the town. And beyond the town, the country. Little smoldering spots for more towns. And beyond, the sea, the night. On and on. And whatever spot he stood on, he knew that he stood alone. All around, the vastness and terror of the immense night which is roused and stirred for a brief while by the day, which returns and will remain at last eternal, holding everything in its silence and gloom.
She's dead. What was it all for? Her struggle.
You're alive.
She's not.
She is. In you.
I don't want to be alive.
You've got to keep alive for her sake. You've got to carry forward her living. You've got to go on with it.
I don't want to. I don't want to. Oh, Mother. Oh, Mother.
You have been listening to Sons and Lovers, an NBC Theater production of the novel by D.H. Lawrence. If you wish to increase your knowledge and appreciation of literature, we suggest that you might enjoy the college-supervised courses now being offered in connection with the NBC Theater. For full information, write to NBC Theater in care of one of the following universities or colleges: the University of Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky; the University of Tulsa, Tulsa, Oklahoma; Kansas State Teachers College, Pittsburgh, Kansas; Washington State College, Pullman, Washington; the University of Arizona, Tucson, Arizona; Texas College of Arts and Industries, Kingsville, Texas; and Brooklyn College, Brooklyn, New York. You also have a chance to win a set of the famous Encyclopedia Britannica. Several of the universities and colleges offering these courses are giving the Encyclopedia as prizes to the students doing the best work. Enroll in a supervised course, and you may be one of the fortunate ones to win the Encyclopedia Britannica. And be with us at the NBC Theater next week for one of British novelist Graham Greene's best entertainments, England Made Me, and the following week for Christopher Isherwood's Prater Violet. Sons and Lovers was adapted for the NBC Theater by Clarice A. Ross. Our intermission commentator was Diana Trilling, whose commentary was recorded. In today's cast, Ramsey Hill was the narrator, Alec Harford was a minor, Perry Kilburn was Paul. John Ramsey Hill was Paul the Child, Donald Morrison was Morell, Norma Varden was Mrs. Morell. Virginia McDowell was Miriam, Alma Lawton was Annie, Monty Margetts was Clara, Otla Naismith, her mother, Tudor Owen, was Dawes. Your announcer, Don Stanley. The director of the NBC Theater is Andrew C. Love. This program came to you from Hollywood. What's on NBC today? Well, today there's more great entertainment for you on this station when Douglas Fairbanks and Geraldine Fitzgerald co-star in Double Door on Theater Guild on the Air. For comedy today, be sure to hear Phil Harris and Alice Faye, and stay tuned for mystery on The Adventures of Sam Spade. Yes, you'll hear great entertainment today on NBC. You're tuned for the stars on NBC.